across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Good to have you there. You might be hearing this at the very, very end of 2020. You're probably going to be hearing this, I would suspect, maybe across the new year time, 2021. So if you are hearing it at the beginning of the new year, or perhaps on the threshold of the year, just want to wish you the happiest possible 2021. And let's hope we can pull ourselves out of whatever problems we are in and have been in throughout 2020 during the year of 2021. I wish you and everybody around you all the very best from here. And thank you for all of your communications. I'm going to get straight into the guest on this edition. This is a slightly extended version of a conversation that I had on the radio over Christmas with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, for my money, is the most diligent UFO researcher there is these days. His case files include thousands and thousands of investigations and sightings and reports. And those reports, the interesting thing is, have continued right the way up to when we recorded our conversation at the very end of December. They never stop. Even during COVID time, when a lot of people are locked down, they're not going out, they're not going anywhere, the reports continue. And those reports, if anything, get more fascinating year by year. So we're going to go through some of those reports and also talk about his work. 2021 will be the 27th year that Peter Davenport has headed up the National UFO Reporting Center. Always a nice man to speak with and a deeply interesting researcher. So that's what we're going to do. If you want to get in touch with me, give me an idea for the show, feedback on it, whatever, please go to my website, theunexplained.tv, designed and created by Adam. You can send me a message from there if you'd like to. Let me know what you think about the show, make a guest suggestion, and if you can give me an idea of what your email is about in the subject line, that would be great. And thank you for all of the lovely emails from every part of the world that I've had over the Christmas and now the New Year holiday period. Very kind of you to think of me during this period. All right, let's get to the US now then. The guest on this edition of the show, Peter Davenport, the head of the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter Davenport, thank you very much. How are you, Peter?
Well, thank you, Howard, for the invitation to appear. I'm doing well, thank you. I hope the same as you is for you.
Well, yeah, it's a bit of a curtailed Christmas, certainly for me. I mean, my Christmases are always quiet anyway, but this one will be almost noiseless.
Yeah, same for me. I had travel plans, but those have been scotched. I think the best thing to do is stay huddled down and avoid been exposed to this virus, for sure.
Well, that's the advice from the government, and I guess we're just going to have to pretty much scrub Christmas for 2020 and hope that we can do it properly. Do it really well. Maybe do it better than ever in 2021, Peter. And now, I was saying, and please take me to task if I didn't say anything that was correct, but I was saying that your work at the National UFO Reporting Center hasn't really slowed down this year.
That's correct. Absolutely. The COVID virus has affected a lot of things, but the one thing it has not affected is apparently UFOs and UFO reports. They're coming in at least as fast as they always have and probably faster still.
And why do you think that might be? Is it simply the very basic thing that people have got more time on their hands?
Well, that could be. A lot of people have said that it's more likely that a person will see a UFO if that person is hunkered down at home, but I disagree. Seems more logical to me that a person would be more likely to see a possible UFO by being outside, for example, walking to work or from work or going for groceries. But there's been a somewhat of an uptick in the number of sightings we've been receiving, although that has to be qualified because we're getting a lot of reports of these so-called Starlink satellites, clusters of up to 60 satellites flying overhead. They're very dramatic.
Right. So a year or two ago, it was Chinese lanterns. This year, it seems to be that a lot of people, but by no means all of them, are seeing the Starlink satellites that, of course, are designed and they're being launched in phases at the moment to provide internet for places that can't get internet.
Yeah. It's a project that Elon Musk has initiated and is funding. And I have not seen a display of them myself, but I've seen videos of them, and they're very dramatic to see upwards of 60 star-like objects moving overhead in formation is quite an unsettling prospect to a lot of people.
And many people believe, and many people have contacted me, that what they've seen is some kind of extraterrestrial, potentially invasive activity in the sky, when in fact they've seen these. How difficult is it going to be going forward to be able to differentiate between Elon Musk's Starlink satellites and other things of that nature that we're going to be sending skyward and, you know, if I can call them genuine UFOs?
Probably not that difficult, since we're attuned to the phenomenon now. And I'm of the mind to contact Elon Musk to see if they would set up a website that would allow one to determine, to confirm whether one of these clusters is in fact a cluster of Starlink. They've launched quite a number of them. I think maybe as many as a dozen clusters. And each one of those is orbiting the planet Earth in its own respective orbital path. So all of this information is known. They just have to bring it together in one spot so a person can access it.
Right. And the thing that we have to say when it comes to the Starlink satellites is that anybody hearing this now, and as I say, I've had more reports from my listeners this year than I've ever had. People sending me images and sending me reports, wanting me to know stories from their own lives that have happened this year or that have happened in previous years, and they wanted to tell somebody. What advice would you give then for somebody who sees, for example, a cluster of lights moving in what appear to be formation? How would you advise them to differentiate between that and something that you would want to know about?
Well, traditionally, the Starlink satellites are lined up in a straight line. They pass overhead, arranged, oriented nose to tail. I equate it to a line of camels or a line of elephants, circus elephants, holding each other's tail. They're usually equidistant, but not always. And I suspect that's the best criterion to use to determine whether it's a cluster of Starlinks, is whether they're equidistant, whether they're all traveling at the same speed across the night sky, and so on. But I don't have a magical solution to the problem. That's why I am considering contacting SpaceX or the Starlink Corporation to see if they would set up a website with all this information.
I mean, I've tried to contact Elon Musk. I would love to interview him. I don't know if you've tried to contact him directly. He's not an easy person to get.
I'm not surprised. He's probably very busy.
But maybe coming from New Fork, you'll have a better chance. Now, 27 years heading the National UFO Reporting Center, Peter, that's a very, very long time.
Yes.
What, in 27 years, how do you think it's, before we get into talking specific cases, which is what my listener loves, of course, and especially at this time of year when they've got time to listen, how has it all changed in that period?
Well, there have been a few changes. The big one is the workload. As I mentioned earlier, we're getting substantially more reports than in the past, and all of that work falls to one person. It falls to me, unfortunately. So I've got to make some changes here to keep up with the workload. But there have been some changes in the nature of UFO reports. Most people, particularly journalists, focus on the number of reports. From my vantage point, it's much more significant to focus on the type or the quality of reports. And the one thing I've seen over the last 26 or 27 years is there's been a change in the nature of a sighting, typical sighting. Whereas it used to be, people traditionally would report lights in the sky. Well, lights in the sky are very difficult to ascribe to a UFO. But over the last several years, I would make it 4 or 5 years, people are reporting discrete, palpable craft, not just lights. It's almost as if these creatures have a desire to have human beings see them now, whereas formerly that was not the case. Also, there's been a change with regard to clusters of lights. Beginning in late April, I believe it was, late April or late May of 2012, we started receiving, and this is also the case for the Mutual UFO Network. They've experienced the same phenomenon. We're receiving a great many reports of clusters of red, orange, yellow, amber, and gold lights, a cluster being up to 150.
150?
Yeah. This antedates the Starlink project, which I believe began in late May of 2019. So we're getting a substantial quantity of this type of report, a cluster being anywhere from two, maybe 150. If people would like to see an example of what I'm talking about, they can go to our website, ufocenter.com. And there are two reports that I traditionally direct people to because of the quality of the observer. The first one is from the 7th of July, 2013, a retired U.S. astronaut from Athens, Texas, was out standing in the looking at the evening sky with his wife, and she was looking east, he was looking west, and his wife said, "Honey, look at this." And he wheeled around in time to see, I believe it was initially three red objects just streak overhead. Bear in mind, this man is a former fighter pilot, an airline pilot. He's accustomed to identifying aerial phenomena very quickly. And I had several conversations with the gentleman, very nice guy. And he said during one of those conversations, "Peter, I have no idea what those objects were, but I'll guarantee you they were not manufactured on our planet." That's a fairly stark statement for a U.S. astronaut.
That's astonishing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's a very good sighting. Again, that is from the 7th of July, 2013, Athens, Texas. People can read the report if they'd like to. A second similar report comes from Glendale, Arizona, northwest community of Phoenix, Arizona. It was submitted by a gentleman who describes himself as a retired Arizona Highway Patrol officer. And he was standing in his living room one night. Actually, it was the 28th of September, 2013. And he saw six or seven orange lights streak horizontally from west to east in front of him as he stood in his living room looking through his living room window. And he rushed outside onto the porch on the north side of his house, hoping to see these objects retreat in the eastern sky. They were gone by the time he got outside, but he stood there and watched. He estimated a total of 150 go by his house. Again, people can read that report for the 28th of September, 2013, Glendale, Arizona. So there's a great deal of activity going on, and even MUFON and the National UFO Reporting Center have collaborated on these, to a degree, on these sightings, because neither of our organizations has any idea what they could be ascribed to.
And is there anybody that yourselves, and UFOC, or indeed MUFON, can refer to? Can refer these up to? Is there any agency of government that you can take these reports to and say, "Look, here's something that is genuinely unexplained. We don't understand what that is. What's your take on this? What do you know?"
Yeah. Well, I've given up on approaching the government. Their position traditionally is always the same. There's no such thing as a UFO. We're not interested. We don't study them. We don't want to listen to you. And
even in 2020, I thought that we were getting closer to the possibility of maybe, Washington hearings about these things. I know there have been hearings before, but maybe, even more intense hearings, even more focused hearings about all of this, plus the revelations about the Tic Tac UFOs and other more recent sightings of that kind, and the revelations from people like one of the pilots in the Tic Tac case, David Fravor. And once again, another account of somebody saying the way these things moved couldn't possibly be from this planet. We don't have anything with those aerodynamic capabilities. Even in that light, you're still being stonewalled.
Yeah, that appears to be the case. And I've met David Fravor, a wonderful guy, an unimpeachable source of accurate information, in my opinion, a former U.S. Marine officer and commander of his wing. His story is very compelling. But the point I would make is, yes, the government seemed to thaw its position on UFOs when they made that announcement back 3 years ago this month. December 2017 it was, I believe. But in all that time subsequent, they've released only one other report. So they've essentially released two reports in 3 years. In that amount of time, MUFON and the National UFO Reporting Center have released somewhere between 6,000 and 8,000 reports per year over 3 years. So if their objective is to release information about the UFO phenomenon, they're being very leisurely about it.
What about the revelations in the last week or so from the former head of the Israeli space program, Chaim Eshed, or I believe it's pronounced Esht, who says that effectively we've been working with alien civilizations. There is a base on Mars that's a collaboration between ourselves and aliens. The base is below the surface of Mars. Do you give any credence to any of that?
I certainly do. That's a very interesting statement. And the gentleman has held so many responsible positions that I can't imagine he would have made that statement if it were not true. We could probably get in more trouble by uttering a falsehood on this matter than he would by uttering the truth.
And of course, he's 87 years of age. You know, I think the general thought is around him that he's made a decision that at 87 years of age, it's time for him to say something.
Yeah. And I had a call very similar to what he's saying just in mid-December. From a gentleman who is a former F-14 pilot for the U.S. Navy back in the 1970s. He called to talk about his sighting as a five-year-old lad in the state of Colorado in 1955 with his grandfather. He claimed that he and his grandfather actually went aboard a ship. And I'm strongly inclined to believe this gentleman because he sounds very credible over the telephone. But I was amazed when I called him back to clarify a few points he had raised during our first conversation. I was flabbergasted to discover that he'd had a second experience. This is in the early 1970s during the Vietnam War. He was an F-14 Tomcat pilot. And he had been chased by four yellow lights, which he in turn attempted to chase himself with his jet as they departed in the sky. And he was unable to catch up to them. They were traveling so fast. So there are a great many things that have taken place and are continuing to take place that we know nothing about. And I take the position that it's a very, very important phenomenon. In my view, if we are being visited by these creatures we call aliens and craft we call UFOs, and moreover, the government or governments are not telling us the truth about that, I think that's a newsworthy story.
Just before we wrap up this segment, Peter, the gentleman who talked to you about his Vietnam experience and also about being taken aboard a ship, what was it, when we come to the idea that he was taken aboard a ship, what was it that sounded so compelling and rang true for you about that?
Well, just his voice and his tone. they say a great deal about a person. Maybe I'm deceiving myself, but you can tell a great deal about a person who's just from his voice.
And did he tell you anything about the ship?
Yes, he described it in some detail, and he saw two types of creatures aboard the craft. Taller creatures, I've forgotten the color that he cited, and a much shorter creature that was about his height when he was 5 years of age. So it's a very good case, and we're awaiting two follow-up written reports from the gentleman now.
Well, I can't wait to hear more about that. And of course, it's a story we both know that many people have told. It's not just the people who've made headlines like Travis Walton and Calvin Parker. You know, many people have told stories like that. Peter, just before we get into the crop of current reports from this busy year of 2020, some recent things. I spoke recently, it was a great privilege to speak with a man I'm sure you know, Jacques Vallée.
Sure.
Jacques Vallée was saying to me that there seems to be, and you could argue, that, for example, the Tic Tac UFOs and other things we've seen that behave in these unusual ways might be some kind of almost projection. You said that it looked like something was trying to show us something. So do you think that there's a possibility that everything from the wedding cake craft to the strange lights in the sky to the various formations and gradations of UFOs might be some kind of projection into our consciousness, which would explain why some people in the same location will see a thing and others won't see the same thing? Could it be that we perhaps are coming to a new understanding, I suppose, of what these things are?
Well, I think we're getting closer for sure. The more information we pile up and compare with each other gives us more information as to what we're dealing with. I don't think we're anywhere close to understanding the full dimension of what the phenomenon presents, though. Mm. Anything is possible. And when I look at man's relatively primitive understanding of physics and the physical environment we live in, I'm unimpressed by how little we know. And I think anything is possible. We have to prepare ourselves as a planet for some vastly important revelations about what role we play in this galaxy and universe.
And do you think those revelations might be fueled to some extent by what we are about to do again on the moon and for the first time on Mars?
It could be. Some people have asserted that we were warned to stay off the moon when we were last there. Whether that's true or not, I have no way of knowing whatsoever. But if that's the case, then it might trigger consciousness, awareness on the part of the aliens by this recent Chinese sortie to the moon. I have no way of knowing. Despite all the information I've collected over the last 26 years, I don't think it imparts to me any special privileged information with regard to my understanding of what's really going on.
And immediately before we start looking at the more current cases, a question about what is to happen in January. You will have a new president. Joe Biden will be sworn in. Will you be making contact with Joe Biden? Is it something that you routinely do when a new president comes in? Do you introduce yourself?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's time for people to start sending letters directly to their representatives to let them know that it's now time for them to share with us mere citizens, what they know about this phenomenon. Because after all, this Israeli intelligence officer has suggested that agreements were signed whereby the alien species would be authorized under U.S. or under terrestrial laws to abduct people and study them. If that's the case, we have a right, I feel. The citizens have a right to that information, to be able to protect themselves, if that's at all possible.
Do you think enough of the citizenry are interested, though?
Well, I think the interest in UFOs is stronger than it's ever been, in my opinion, from what I've seen.
I agree. I do agree. And not just because I do this show, but because I look at the media. I look at what people tell me. Okay, current cases. You were kind enough to send me one that is very hot that you're working on at the moment. The date, 13th of November this year. And if I may read some of what is quite a long description, so I won't, of this report, I won't read all of it. But this was sent to you in November. Quote, I was the captain of flight and airline deleted. On November the 13th, operating from Charlotte, North Carolina to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The flight departed the gate in Charlotte at a particular local time, which has been redacted, removed. After takeoff, while climbing through an altitude of roughly 15,000 feet heading north, I saw an object out of the corner of my eye that then moved with very significant relative speed from the top of my field of view to at or below my perceived nighttime horizon, nearly vertically down, with slight movement from left to right. It was moving at a speed consistent with a meteor, but it had no tail. And the report goes on. He said to his first officer, did you see that? His response was, yeah, I saw that. I said, that was not a meteor. He echoed that sentiment and said something to the effect of, it turned. I then said, it wasn't a plane either. And my first officer agreed with that. White, almost blue object. I'm skipping forward here. And then at the bottom of the second page of this report, nothing I've seen, including fighter jets, change direction that sharply or move at that speed. We asked the air traffic control, I believe in Atlanta or Washington, if they'd picked up an object rapidly descending in front of us. They mentioned an aircraft still above us, slowly descending to another altitude above us. This was clearly not related to what I saw. After several minutes discussing what we had seen, as well as the likelihood of us catching both flak and a drug test for a report of this nature, we both agreed that the right thing to do was to report it to air traffic control. That's not all of this story, but this is a big one, yeah?
Yeah, in my opinion, a very big one, because we have a case in which we have two senior airline pilots, both of them former military pilots, reporting exactly the same thing. They both saw it at the same time. They concurred. They recognized immediately how important it was, and they reported it to the National UFO Reporting Center. I spoke with both pilot and first officer, co-pilot, and they were very compelling. Going back to my earlier statement about what you can tell about a person from his voice, both these gentlemen were very convincing, and their facts were, they just meshed very nicely. So, moreover, their description of the flight of the object, the manner in which it passed across the night sky, I think obviates any possibility that it was any kind of terrestrial aircraft. It was moving so fast and it made such an abrupt turn at the end of its flight path that I can't imagine that it's anything that was from our planet. So yes, an excellent report.
And the guys, the two of them, their company, the airline, seem to, you know, they're not stopping them from talking about this, clearly. It says in the report, on November 17th, an FAA, Federal Aviation Authority, UFO investigative team member contacted me through a member of company management and spoke with me before asking permission to pass my information to you, that's you, Peter, for your organization's investigative purposes. So this has all had the stamp of approval from the airline.
Well, I'm not sure the airline knows what their employees have reported.
Right.
That's why.
So they've done it on the basis that it may have been something explainable.
Yes.
Right.
But I'm not sure the airline even is aware that their employees have reported this experience. But that's a very good report.
Okay. No, that's interesting. It just, in this paragraph, November 17th, an FAA UFO investigative team member contacted me through a member of company management. So somebody at that company knows about this, or have I got this wrong?
Well, I'm not sure. I can't speak on behalf of the company or what other people have done, but the person who reported to me was an FAA air traffic controller. And he was able to contact the pilot and first officer. And that information was imparted to me, and it allowed me to get in touch with them and encourage them to submit a written report. Interestingly, most, and not surprisingly, I guess, most people want to just talk about their UFO sighting. Hardest job I've ever had in my life, Howard, is trying to get an American who believes he's seen a UFO to write it down in detail. But both these gentlemen have written reports, and they should be posted to our website in the near future.
A month has gone by since it happened, just over. How are they feeling about it?
I haven't talked to them except on one occasion, and they admitted that they found it very interesting. I think the pilot in his report emphasizes how unusual an event it appeared to him to be. So I don't know what they're thinking now, though. I haven't spoken with them since that initial conversation.
So in the normal run of things, what will the equivalent of Britain's Civil Aviation Authority, the FAA there, what will they do about this?
I have no idea.
I mean, you know, how do they log? I suppose what I'm asking really is, how do they log these things?
Well, I'm sure they do log them.
But do they call them unexplained? Do they say cause unknown? Or do they speculate a cause?
Well, if they're still trying to figure out what's going on, I would encourage them to contact me, because if they don't understand what they're dealing with, it's time they did. And I think we amateur UFO investigators could tell them a great deal about what they're dealing with. And I presume that they access our data on a routine basis. In fact, I know for a fact, the FBI at one time was monitoring our data very carefully. I presume it's the same for the CIA.
But why do you think the FBI would want to know?
Well, I was contacted by the FBI shortly after the Great Phoenix Lights event in Phoenix, Arizona, and surrounding states. And they admitted that we had posted some information that they found to our website that they found very interesting, and they wanted to know more about it. And that interest gave rise to a 4-hour-long meeting with them in May of 1997. And they were deadly serious about wanting to know more about certain aspects of that case. After all, we have reason to believe, thanks to the great work of Mr. Bill Hamilton, who wrote the book, The Phoenix Lights, we have reason to believe that that event gave rise to a declaration of Defense Condition 3, which is the status of forces in a time of emergency. Allegedly, the U.S. forces went directly from Defense Condition 5, which is normal peacetime status, to Defense Condition 3 in one step, which is unusual, very unusual.
So clearly the FBI were wanting to know, and I wonder if they ever found out, what the phenomena, and we have to say phenomena in the plural, there were many phenomena around that time of the Phoenix Lights, what they were.
Yes.
And for,
yes,
you know, the American establishment to be on alert at that level clearly indicates that someone somewhere was totally regarding this as a threat, as a potential threat that had to be protected against.
Absolutely.
Wow. Okay.
And a point I would add as a sort of a codicil here is we have reason to believe that at least one of the 4 or 5 or 6 objects that were loitering over Phoenix and surrounding areas that night was very large and was intercepted by 2 F-15 fighters. Interestingly, and your audience in the UK might not be aware of this, but President Clinton injured the ligaments of his knee while he was vacationing or overnighting at the home of Greg Norman, the celebrated
golfer,
Australian golfer. And that is alleged injury, and I have to say alleged, because I question whether it actually took place or not, it may have been a ruse, a cover to move the president very suddenly from where he was to where he had to be as a result of a declaration of DEFCON 3. That happened within seconds or minutes of the intercept of one of those objects over Phoenix, Arizona. They were just concurrent events. And that's a lot of coincidence for me to swallow without asking a few questions.
It's quite a bit. And of course, Clinton said after his term in office that he didn't learn anything about aliens, UFOs, etc. Maybe we were perhaps not told entirely the full strength of it. All right, let's get one more report in then. This one is just a couple of days from when we're recording this, really a few days. This is a raw report from the 16th of December this year, afternoon time, Central Washington State. And I'll just read the report as it came in here. I was with my wife driving from Kennewick to Seattle. We were having a conversation about a movie we watched the night before. While I looked over to her, I saw an object that was being covered by a cloud. I've never seen a cloud that big and that close to the ground. I pointed it out to my wife. She initially only noticed the cloud. She didn't think much of it because she'd seen a single cloud like that before. We looked again, and a black funnel came from the back end of the cloud. It looked like a tornado or something like that was heading towards the ground. In the funnel, an object came from within it, like it had been hiding. It reminded me of the scene from the movie War of the Worlds, where the aliens traveled through the lightning. The object looked like an aircraft. There wasn't an explosion or fire, and we never actually saw it hit the ground. It was too far away to see while driving away from the scene. Once the cloud released the object, the funnel returned to the cloud, and the black portion traveled to the front, in, and the cloud disappeared. So once again, we have a report, and there have been quite a few of these through history, of a cloud or apparent cloud of a strange formation being used to cloak something.
Yeah, isn't that an interesting report?
It's an amazing report. And that's just, middle of December.
Yeah. And I thought I'd forward that to you because it is characteristic of a type of report that is coming in with some regularity here, and that is reports in which UFOs are thought to be concealing themselves in clouds. And I have any number of reports like this, but this is exemplary of the many that I've received of this nature.
We've even had cases like this. I know that my friend Jason Gleaves, a UFO image analyst in Chester in the UK, sent me a picture of something, of a very strange cloud formation. I think it was over a village in Cheshire. And there have been quite a few reports in this country of apparent strange cloud formations. You know, the rest of the sky is completely clear blue, and then here is this great big cloud. But that report from Washington State is astonishing, Peter. Peter Davenport, head of the National UFO Reporting Center, with us for about 10 more minutes or thereabouts. Peter, report that you got in on the 17th of December. I mean, these reports come in thick and fast, don't they? They don't stop. This was a very short sighting. It comes from Guayama. You'll have to tell me exactly where that is. It's Puerto Rico, isn't it, I think?
Yes.
Okay. Standing out in front of the house just after 9:50 p.m., chatting with the neighbor, I caught movement in the sky above me out of the corner of my eye. I looked up, and it was a silent, low-flying, triangular craft with cream-colored lights at each corner. The corners were slightly rounded. It flew east-west. It disappeared into the clouds. It didn't make a sound. That, in 2020, is a classic UFO that could have been reported in the 60s.
Yeah. And this cuts back to a comment I made during our first segment, the type of report. Craft being seen briefly streaking across the night sky. I must have thousands of that type of report in my database, which are posted to the homepage, available for anybody to read. But people are seeing discrete, palpable craft, not just lights in the sky. And this is a very good one. Thanks to the very nice work of David Marler from Albuquerque, New Mexico, who wrote a book on triangular-shaped UFOs, we now know that the majority of craft that are seen and reported to UFO investigators are not discs or circles or spheres, but rather triangular in craft. boomerang. Some people describe them as boomerang shape. Others suggest they're isosceles or equilateral triangles. But this is that type of report, and it appears to be a good one. It's well written, as you can see.
And that report of the triangle with the lights at each corner, that's consistent with photographs that I've seen from various parts of the world, not just the United States and the UK, back decades.
Yes, okay. That's right.
Well, how strange is that? Okay, 17th of December. This is late at night, 22:50. This is Canada, a place called Pickering there. As I was driving home from work on Thursday, December 17th at 22:50, I observed a ball of white light travelling at incredible speed. It was travelling north, appeared to be about 300 feet from the ground, and was travelling horizontally, perfectly. The light appeared to be about 800 to 1,000 feet east of the road I was travelling on, Brock Road, south of Highway 407, Pickering, Ontario, Canada. Lake Ontario is roughly 20 kilometres south of where I saw the light. The sighting only lasted about 2 seconds because of the incredible speed of the ball of light. It didn't strike me as a meteor or a shooting star, because I've seen these before. This was something different. So, you know, once again, an anomalous kind of light moving for a short period at incredible speed.
Very similar to the sighting by those two airline pilots that we talked about earlier. The one thing about this type of report is, as you say, the incredible speed with which the object passes across the sky. It can't be a satellite, probably not an aircraft of terrestrial origin anyway. And so, therefore, what are they? And they don't appear to be consistent, as witnesses often report, they don't appear to be consistent with any kind of meteoric event, because meteors are, they usually fragment or they give off sparks, and they don't last very long, usually a few seconds only.
And astronomers catalog those, don't they?
Yeah, we have an organization here in the U.S., called the American Meteor Society, and they catalog and post what are thought to be meteoric events. Of course, they're biased towards meteor explanation. I would be more biased or much less predisposed to assume that because it's very bright and very fast that it's a meteor, because there are, I believe, other things out there that can mimic the flight of a meteor quite handily.
Do you think there was? Sorry to interrupt. I'm just conscious of the clock here. This is also fascinating. But do you think there's any significance of the lake being so near?
Of the lake being there, you say?
Yeah. I mean, could this thing have been heading to, or you know, emanated from the lake?
Could be. I'd have to interview the crew to be able to answer.
I mean, I know that's, you know, I realize that's a difficult question, but, you know, more and more we're talking about things that come from not the sky, but from under the water. Okay, last one, 19th of December. Very, very recent, this one. Duration 1 minute. The location, Sioux City, Iowa. We observed a very bright white light heading west-east at a very high rate of speed again. We were on the farm, had a very good view of other planes in the distance. All we could see was a big, round, white light. No other colours of any kind to travel clear across the sky in a very short time. No trails, just like those airline crew. Flew much lower than normal aircraft do. We could hear it as it passed over us, and it didn't appear to be a shooting star of any kind. So kind of similar, this one.
Yeah, very similar. Similar to the one that you just read, and similar again to the report by the two airline pilots. All they saw was a very extremely bright blue light that moved across the sky, not only very rapidly, but it made in the case of the airline pilots, they reported that it made a very abrupt, unterrestrial type turn. Airplanes obviously can't do that. So we're confronted with the dilemma, what are we dealing with here?
I want to take
terrestrial origin.
I want to take you just in these last remaining minutes to a couple of things. One, I know you want to talk about radar, but this very quickly. Jacques Vallée, famous UFO investigator, man with a tremendous profile. I spoke with him at length very recently. And he is trying to, or would like to, put together a team of collators of UFO reports. He believes, and I'm sure he's right, that we're only scratching the surface of the UFO phenomenon, because there are reports from many countries in many languages, and they're never put together. They're never, you know, they're never closely corroborated one to another. They're not put together or properly collated. You know, and so Jacques was of the view, and I think, as I say, he's right, that we're never really going to get absolutely a handle on this phenomenon until we have a team of people who are conversant with many languages, putting together the commonalities between all of these reports. What do you think?
Well, it's a respectable endeavor, I think, but it represents a great deal of work, and a lot of resistance will be encountered, I anticipate, from people who are called on to give up their life's work for amalgamation to a collective. I don't know what position I would take, but there's clearly a lot of work that has to be done. We've only scratched the surface. I estimate, and I think I've shared this with your audience in programs past, I estimate that out of somewhere between 10,000 and 20,000 sightings of what the percipient believed was a UFO, we get only one report. What we have to do is get the citizenry galvanized, excited about this subject, such that when they see a UFO, they will report it. Most people do not report it.
Mm. And they do so with discernment. So they think, okay, could this be Starlink satellites? No, don't think so. Does this look like those good reports that we went through just a moment ago? You know, could that be a meteor? Well, no, because it didn't behave like a meteor. So, you know, let's report it. So people need to do it in a discerning way, but they need to do it, I think, is the point. Very finally, we've only got 2 minutes to talk about this, but you're very keen and you're trying to press the government in the US and governments to initiate a thing called passive radar. What is that?
Passive radar is capitalizing on the radio or television broadcast signals that are emanating out from every antenna in the world. And that electromagnetic signal reflects off some UFOs, we know from experience. Some UFOs reflect radar. We know that for a fact. And it's been almost 26 years since I made this proposal. We can capitalize on that electromagnetic radiation reflecting off the surface of UFOs to track the UFOs if we have the proper receiver and proper computer software. It would allow us to detect and track a UFO in the near-Earth environment, even outside the atmosphere. And I've been proposing this, and I'm delighted to share it with an audience in the UK, because this concept actually began in England during the Blitz, when they used the BBC signal reflecting off of it, both enemy and allied aircraft, to direct them to one another.
So presumably you would want governments generally, aviation authorities around the world, and broadcasters to get together and coordinate. Do you think that's a likelihood?
The power of this proposal is you don't need the government. You can, with computers available on the shelf today, you can build a system to track UFOs by detecting the reflected commercial radio signal off their surface. And it would take me a while to describe it in full, but...
But I get the point. Do you think it might happen? Have you had some interest?
I've had a lot of interest. I haven't had any funding whatsoever.
Well, maybe this could be the start of it.
Requires the writing of between 2 and 3 million lines of computer code. But the hardware is available, the computers, the radio receivers, the antennas, all of that is ready to go. What we need is the software.
Okay.
And that's that's a little more difficult to assemble.
Well, I've got a listener called Rob. Rob, I don't know whether you're listening now. I hope you might be. I think this is right up your street, as they say. To be continued, I think, Peter, we'll talk more about this. Just very finally, I've got here in my hand, I mentioned October, which was a pretty light month. And even then, there were 70 reports or so. And that includes craft with S-shaped wings that just disappeared. Somebody who saw something when he was fishing. And I'm just leafing through the pages here. Flashing lights and orbs. I mean, and so it goes. You know, this thing is happening when you sleep, whatever day of the year it might be. This is still happening. Fast, bright, cigar-shaped object. Three silver UFOs circling erratically, moving over Route 3 in Billericay. Is that Massachusetts, I think?
Yes.
And even from Aberdeen, Scotland. I mean, there are so many, and that's just one representative month. You do a lot of hard and good work, Peter. I hope that you're able to get some kind of relaxation over this holiday period, and thank you for helping me.
Well, it's been my pleasure. You're a delight to work with, Howard. And I wish you a happy new year. Let's hope this virus goes away.
And I, oh yes, please. And I always love talking with you. Let's make a date in the diary for 2021. I can't believe we're saying 2021. It seemed like science fiction just a few years ago. And here we are on the threshold of it, whatever it will bring. People want to contact you. How do they do it?
They can reach me on the UFO hotline, telephone hotline, which is area code 206-722-3000. That number again is 206-722-3000. We've had that number for 46 years. And they can reach me via our website. And that website is ufocenter.com. That's ufocenter.com.
I hope your 27th year at the head of the National UFO Reporting Center is excellent, Peter. Have a lovely break and happy new year. Take care.
Thank you. Same to you, Howard.
Peter Davenport, we'll hear more from him, I know, in 2021. Those reports just don't stop. Thank you very much for being part of The Unexplained for all of these years. We are now going into the 15th year of the podcast, amazingly enough. Thank you for all of your support that you've given me in so many ways over the years, and especially during this difficult year. It's been greatly appreciated. Right, more great guests in the pipeline here at The Unexplained in 2021. So until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online, and please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm. And above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.